It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you all along. Good to see my partner.
Yes, Captain Mike Ward. Always good to be seen by you.
That's likewise here. And a lot to do on today's show. Of course, the first of the August shows. This is a transitional time, man.
It really is. This is
what people say, that's October. No, really, it's August.
It's always a week or two after rodeo. That's just the way it is. Now we're 2 weeks. Can you believe we're already 2 weeks past the rodeo?
That's correct.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
Yep, and already into August.
And most people put their boats up. A lot of people put their boats up after the rodeo. But I'm telling you, there's so many people. They fish the rodeo, and then that's about it. They don't fish anymore.
Well, we got snapper still to catch.
Yeah.
You know, still have snapper quota out there. Inshore fishing's been pretty good, you know. So that's good. And, of course, some of that moving up the bay. That
right.
Fishing for the trout, moving
right.
up the bay, so more.
About
not that they
month,
hadn't, but
about
not
a month,
that they hadn't.
Month and a half.
Well, not that they hadn't been up there, but they're starting to be consistent as you go mid bay.
Right.
You know, right now, and on some of those reefs up there and all that. So it's getting. Not that there's not always some up there, but it's more consistent up the bay. You don't have to be as far south to get on fish. So that's
more
one of those
sandy
signs.
In the water right now.
Yep.
The water's clear.
That is true. So
yep.
People take advantage of that. And then, of course, something else we're going to talk about. We'll talk about getting ready for the woods in a little bit. But talking about fishing and continuing fishing, a couple of weeks ago, we had Brandon Lunsford on from Recreational Sales Trailer Company. And
yes.
He does boat trailers, does utility trailers, all kind of stuff. But we got him on to talk about
boat
trailers.
What a great guy.
Yeah, good guy. His head's already big enough. He's a great guy.
He knows
trailers like nobody's business. And we had him on before the rodeo just to talk about things. You know, everybody pays attention to the boat engines and the bait and the ice and all that. So we did the thing that's different, said, hey, what do we need to look at, Brandon, for our boat trailers? And he went through, and that podcast is up. Y'all can check it out. It's really a good, you know, starter on things to check on your boat trailer. Some of the things you're like, oh, I would have thought of that. And some of those I wouldn't have thought about
that's
that.
That's right.
And you recently, I had just had some work done on my boat trailer probably a month before that show with Brandon. And then you went by the other day.
I did.
And this is, you've been having big boats since I remember because I was watching you on TV since I was a kid.
Right. That's a few days ago.
Yeah. So you've had them that long, and the fact that you and I both learned from Brandon in that interview the other day, things to check on the boat trailer, it tells everybody, even if you think you know everything about your boat trailer and it's ready to go, maybe you don't.
Yeah. Well, the other day, you know, we had him on, and let me start over. A year ago, my boat trailer was like 4 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was time to get it serviced. I knew my brakes were gone,
mm-hmm.
you know, so I took it. And basically, because I waited so long to take it by and let him check it out, we ended up having to do everything. You know, it was like,
yep.
I got six tires and brakes and all that. So it was like $4,000 deal to do it, which, you know, that's what it costs mm-hmm. to get all that stuff done nowadays. And he told me, like he did the other day when he was on the show, you need to bring it by at least once a year and let me check everything out on it. You know, well, we're going, mm-hmm. and there's another thing, the Gulf Coast King Classic is going on next weekend, the 9th and 10th, out of Cocoterie, Louisiana. And I'm taking my boat from Mobile to Cocoterie, Louisiana. So I said, you know, this is the perfect time. It's been a year ago. I need to take my trailer and let Brandon look at it.
There's probably nothing wrong. You just need to.
Yeah, that's right. I'm thinking, I hadn't used my brakes that much. So,
right.
You know, the brakes should be fine. Everything should be fine. Well, I take it over there to him this past week, and he calls me up. He says, man, you don't believe this. I had water in all of my hubs.
All of them.
Not any fault of mine, not any fault of Brandon's, but the
bearing buddy thing?
Yeah, the bearing buddy thing. Yeah. It was a defect and caused water to get in all my hubs, so he had to replace all of that and put new ones in, and he actually called me yesterday and told me that he's going to put some new ones on there Monday for me. So they're having a little problems with those little Bear and Buddy things, whatever they are, caps, whatever they are on there. Anyway, so lucky me, I took it by there and had him check it before I went to Cocodrie, Louisiana, because that's a 4 or 5 hour drive pulling a boat. I would not have made it over there. If I had been lucky enough to make it over there, I would not have made it back.
You'd have been on the side of the road somewhere.
Yeah, and I've got two extra on my trailer. I got two extra bearings and tires and, you know, the whole nine yards.
The bearing thing is good to talk about, too, because a lot of us will carry, you know, at least an extra tire.
Yes.
But you are the minority that carries extra bearing. I mean, it's smart,
well,
but most people don't.
It's on the tire. It's everything. You just take it all
the
off
whole thing,
and put it on. If you have a bearing go bad, you just pull the whole thing off and stick the whole thing on there. Stick it on the spindle. So, I mean, it's there and it's ready to go, but I only have two. But all my tires, six of them, had water in them. So I wouldn't have made it back. It would have been bad. So I'm thankful for Brandon for checking my hubs and everything and bearings and take care of that for me. I am very fortunate.
Yeah.
So I'm telling everybody, especially if you're going on some long trip, you definitely need to take it by Brandon and let him check your trailer out.
Yeah.
Period.
And there's a whole bunch. If you'll go back, so that podcast is up from a few weeks ago, our conversation with Brandon. Just if you'll search our podcast, wherever you get our podcast or subscribe, just look for Trailer, you know, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors Trailer, and listen to this, because we go through from the front to the back of the trailer and everything.
That's right.
to check out on it. Yeah, that's one of the things, too, just the size of the trailer. I mean, he made a good point there. He said, hey, if you're just using your boat trailer, you know, so when you go buy a package boat deal,
yeah,
the trailer's going to be enough for the boat as it sits.
That's right.
Like they're not lying to you. The trailer's not, but it's by the time you put everything in it and outfit the boat, it may not be. And then, but he said, you know, listen, if you're trailering from down the neighborhood to go put it at the launch, you know, it may not be a big deal, but over time it can be. And he said, if you take trips like you do going to Louisiana, he said the number of people, and I know several people here in town, they will trailer to the Keys every year,
go down there
and take their boats down there. He said, just because you have the trailer that was matched the boat, you start doing long hauls like that with you're gonna have issues. And
those tires heat up tremendously on the pavement.
Yeah. There's things you need to do to maintain the trailer you have, and you may need to consider. He said, if you're getting a new boat, talk about getting a bigger trailer. Or if you're trying, it's time to get it. Don't just get the same size. Maybe you want to get a little bigger trailer for that
Always
boat.
Overdo your trailer. I learned that so long ago. I actually talked about it on that show when we had Brandon on here. When I bought my 25 Mako, I bought a trailer for it, and it was fine. I mean, it was big enough until I filled it up with gas and put over 1,000 pounds of snapper in there. You know?
How'd that work
out? And other stuff, ice and all the other stuff in there. Well, it caved the trailer in. I mean, it turned it into a V. It really did. It collapsed. So always over buy on your trailer.
Yeah, it's one of these things. It's not the most exciting part, because I mean, the boat is exciting. The engines are exciting. Electronics are exciting. Trailer's not exciting until you're on the side of the road.
That's exactly right.
So yeah, Brandon,
you know, and it's the same way with motors too. Don't underpower your motors on your boat. I mean, if it calls for...
But you know, and you're 100% right.
Yes.
But I bet you there will be more people out there that will walk up and look at a... Because we don't know to look at trailers like, you know, you walk up in a boat, a new boat or used boat, and you see what it's rated for, and you want to make sure it's at max horsepower for that boat. We look at that, and people would judge that. If it's not the, you know, it's not full horsepower, I don't want it. You know, it's not the maximum. At the same time, the trailer under that boat may not be really enough for it, but we don't pay attention to it.
That's right.
That's what I'm saying. Like the engine thing, you're right. Absolutely max it out. But I think more people would go notice that and pay attention as we're walking around this boat, not a single look down at that trailer.
Absolutely. They do. But don't underpower your boat either by motors. Don't underpower your trailer.
Well said.
Or your boat.
Well said. And while we have a minute or two here for the break, you and I were talking before we went on because you've got Mike's got his to-do list here and he's checking stuff off on it. I mean, here it is. It's mid-season and you're doing.
You thought it was my honey-do list.
I thought it was Miss Sarah said. Yeah, but it's your you-do list.
Yeah.
And the things you're doing on your engines, it's not like this is not the start of the season. This is midway through the season and you hadn't fished every day, but you're doing maintenance on it right now.
Well, I've got 100 hours on it, doing my 100-hour maintenance. Okay. And look, I like doing stuff myself.
Right.
I like working on my boat. I work on my boat almost every day. It's in my yard, mm-hmm. under a shed, and I got fans, and I work on my boat just about every day. I put all new oil in my engines, put all new lower units in, put fuel filters in, put fuel filters in the bilge. You know, I do all that stuff myself. I try to fix everything I can. If I have trouble out in that Gulf, I want to know how to work on it. I want to know, you know, what do I need to do to fix it. Another thing I did the other day, first time I've ever done it, I put salt gone in my big tub that I crank my engines up, mm-hmm. and let them run. And, man, that did great.
We were in that conversation the other day.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it did great. And not only that, you get a little rust on your props. Well, when I stuck my whole lower unit in there and ran the engines for about 5 minutes, when I pulled out, the rust was going on my props.
Yeah, you know, what we're talking about is, so we go flush your engines, right? You flush your engines, and you think, okay, well, I've flushed my engine.
Well, you stick a hose to the side of it and run the water through it. Yeah,
that flushed my engine.
Yeah, and that does.
But there's more to it.
There's more to it.
Yeah. That salt gone is like, there can be salt there that doesn't get removed by putting the hose in there and flushing your engine.
Exactly right.
Right, coming right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. As asked for on the text line by a couple people, we are going to talk some throw and mow. Getting ready if you're going to try to not put a disc in the ground this year. We'll talk about some of the techniques I'm using, Mike's use as well.
Yep.
We'll do that when we come back. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have you all along. And yeah, so, and you also told me, like, you got me scared now of my boat, this battery issue. You got to check your batteries.
Man, you got to check everything. I'm telling you, I don't know how people do
it. I'm not talking about a dead battery. Mike's talking about a battery that was getting hot.
Yeah, well, the week before the rodeo, Sean, the day before the rodeo, we were getting everything loaded, and I walked by my console, and I said, I smell something burning. And we got down the console, and, boy, I had a battery that was smoking hot, you know. So I'm thinking, well, the battery went bad. Everything else looked okay. And then we put another battery in, and when we was hooking up the cable, one of the wires sparked a little bit. And I had all the battery switches turned off. Well, here it is the night before we leaving to go to rodeo, you know.
Wow.
I'm thinking, well, I guess we'll be okay. So I took another battery in it, and away we went, and we fished the rodeo. And when I got back, you know, I didn't really think about it for a few days after I got back.
Right.
And then I cleaned everything out of the console where I could get down to the batteries, and it was smoking hot again. So
scary.
Yeah, it is scary. I mean, no telling what could have happened. It had boiled all the water out of both those batteries. And anyway, come to find out what had happened, my number two live well pump, I guess the wire, I haven't fixed it yet. I just found it the other day. But my live well wire from the console back to the number two pump undoubtedly has corroded or shorted out. That wire has been there as long as my boat. My mm-hmm. boat is, you know, what, 18 years old, whatever it is. And it's probably rusted and getting a little short in there,
mm-hmm.
and caused that. But anyway, I took the wire off, and everything's good now. The battery's not getting hot. Everything's good. But that could have caused
a
really devastating thing. You never know what that – I mean, it could have exploded, that battery.
I don't want to talk about some boat wiring out there because I don't want to lose my patience or my temper here on the show. So
yeah.
I fight the war on mine, right? Nothing's getting hot and dangerous. It's just like, why is there not power on this wire?
But yeah.
That's a whole other thing. I want to address this here. And Captain Wayne Miller is going to join us here, talk some bass fishing here in August later on in the show. But I want to take a second here because I got a couple people had texted in about when we're going to talk about throw and mow again.
Yeah.
And
it takes more than a second to explain.
That's
this.
Right. And we'll do some more in-depth shows as we get, you know, closer into to planting season,
right.
You know, I mean, later this month of August into September and talk about it. But right now there are some things that you could do right now, and I have done in this last week to get ready. And throw and mow, if people have probably heard the term, there's a lot of different, there's fancy ways to do it with grain drills and all that. I do the everyman's version of it, and I use two things. I use glyphosate and a bush hog.
Right.
Right, and seed and fertilizer. But, I mean, it's a... What we're talking about, if you hadn't heard it, it's just I'm not disking. And
right.
I had a lot of, you know, my place, I have a lot of soils that are poor. They're sandy soils. So you disk them for a few years in a row, and you've just lost all your topsoil.
You know?
And they can be good. I've always told people, if you got to judge whether it could be good or not, walk off in the woods off your green patch and pull back the pine straw and leaves and look at that dirt right there. In the first couple, it's black or brown. It's good.
Dark
soil.
Soil, yeah.
You walk out in your green patch, you've been disking for the last 20 hunting seasons, you're like, oh, man.
Sand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what I've been doing with it is letting Mother Nature take its course of building topsoil and not disking. So it's a system where you spray, and what I'm about to tell you is going to come into effect. What you're doing now will make it easier later on in the year when you spray it with Roundup, glyphosate, and you kill it.
Yeah.
So you come in through and you kill all the grasses and weeds that have grown in that field. And then once that's dead, I seed and fertilize into the standing dead grass. And then I come back through with the bush hog and mow it low. And that process.
But you're bush hogging now.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to get to. But I'm
okay,
saying,
okay.
I'm going to explain why I bush hog now. But the final process is you spray it. And, you know, it depends on where you are. Some places, you know, you might be spraying as early as August this month, but I usually, because we plant later, I'll spray in late September or something like that. But what you're doing is just spraying long enough to kill all the grass in the weeds in the field so they dry up. So when you go through with your spreader, that the fertilizer and the seed gets thrown into that dead grass. And then the process of mowing does two things. It makes like a fan effect in there where it shakes all the seed and fertilizer down to the ground level, and you lay all that grass on top of it, which traps moisture in and lets those seeds come up.
Like a greenhouse effect.
Yeah. So what I'm doing right now is because if you have, and it's really good, I should have taken a picture of one of those fields the other day. My throw and mow fields are growing so high that I don't have a sprayer that's high enough up to spray it. So, I mean, because you got to figure if you're spraying off an ATV or even off a PTO on a tractor, what do you got? Your spraying booms are going to be 2 feet to three off the ground.
Right.
Okay. Well, if you have a bunch of grasses and stuff that are 4 feet off the ground, 5 feet off the ground, you're not going to get an even spray when you're applying the glyphosate.
Right.
So the reason I've been mowing here this last week is to set back that grass height to the point I'm like, okay, I mow now right here at the end of July, beginning of August, knowing it's going to grow back, but by the time it's time for me to spray, it's not going to be too high for me to spray.
Right, it's not going to be 6 foot tall.
Right, so that's why I do this.
You would like, ideally, for it to be about 2 foot, foot
that'd
and
be
a
great.
Half.
Yeah, that'd
two
be
foot.
Great.
2 foot would be just about right, so when you kill the grass, you know, it's going to thin it out a bunch.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah. If people hadn't paid attention, those of us spray a bunch of this understand, it doesn't just kill the grass. You could take like a thick mat of grass and spray glyphosate on it, and when you come back, not only is the grass dead, you now can see dirt underneath.
It all shrinks up. It shrinks up and thins out. That's right.
So and
about
you need
2 foot,
that.
2 foot, 2.5 foot would be perfect.
Right. So if you had a place, and early on in some of these fields that I was converting from conventional tillage, right, that I was disking, I still disk some fields. It's kind of depends on what it needs. But these fields that are now getting so tall I have to mow them here in July, August, get them ready, used to not grow weeds high enough that I would have to mow them before I spray them.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't have to do much of anything. Just
That's
go
right.
spray them.
That's
yeah.
right.
Some places wouldn't be enough grass to cover up the seed.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and now I'm dealing with those fields that were like that, that now I have to go give them a little trim. I mean, if I could get, and the problem is, you know, I can only regulate the bush hog, the rotary mower's height so much.
Right.
If I could have a mower that would mow like at 2 feet or a foot and a half, I would love it. But that, you know.
That's right. It doesn't work.
But so what I'm doing is, so I'm trying to go, okay, it's August, September. I'll probably get, you know, another 6 or 7 weeks of growth. Okay, if I cut it now, it'll be, because I want that grass when I come back and mow it, because that what gives me the greenhouse over the top of it. So I am just kind of, I'm just getting in front of it and mowing these things so they'll be easy to spray, but they'll have time to grow enough grass to spray.
This is the time to do that. You need to go mow your fields.
Yeah.
So get them down.
Yeah, and just once again, and don't, I mean, I raise it up as high as I can right now.
Yeah.
I raise that bush, the rotary mower as high as I can. I'm running as high as I can, which is still, you know, still leaves, I got to grow some more grass before I spray it. But, you know, I got in rainy Mobile, Alabama, 6 weeks.
Yeah.
It'll grow back.
Well, up at my place, I'm going to cut mine down pretty low because mine's going to grow back pretty fast.
Yeah, well, you got that black belt soil.
That's right.
So, yeah, that's just the thing. If you're going to do, and we'll talk about more of the techniques for throw and mow on further shows, but if you say, okay, this is the year that you're doing it, or as a hunting camp, y'all are going to do it, just something to do. You know those fields. I mean, if you go in there and if you can lose a grown man, if he can walk 10 yards away from you and you lose him in the thicket, it's probably too high. You probably you need to cut that down.
Yeah.
And of course, now the worry is, and I get it, before you send the text messages, I absolutely get it. You're going to say, Sean, why are you doing that? You're mowing these fields. That's fawning cover. You know, they're dropping fawns right now. And it's a thing.
It is.
It's a thing. It's one of the things that actually, for me, is why late July and August is the time I do it, because really the majority of my fawns aren't falling yet. I wish they were, but it's going to be later in the month of August that they put fawns down. But like anywhere, I've looked at pictures from my place before. I'll have fawns. It's like a bell curve, and that's the way the breeding season goes. I'll have fawns that are dropping real early, and heck, fawns are dropping October.
Same
or something,
way in my place. Know?
So there's a, but so a thing I do, I mean, for lack of a better technique, if I'm running through there, I always run, just like if I was in the woods, I didn't know what was underneath where I was cutting. I'll put the loader down and let it just skim the surface. And I put the loader down so it pushes the grass down in front of me just enough that I could see if there was a fawn or something there before.
Right.
And that's been good. But yeah, that's, if your grass hadn't grown, won't grow high enough to give you a problem spraying it come September, then don't worry about it. But if, you're just going to be in a pickle if you have grass is too high and you're trying to go through and spray it.
That's right. And do the mow and grow.
Yeah. Throw and mow.
Throw and mow.
And at that point, too, seriously, y'all, and I mean, it takes a step out. It takes the disking step out. You're coming in there. You know, once you've done this and you got a field that you're going to do this for in September, you know, October, whenever you're planting, you're going to come in there, spray that field in the, you know, plan back, okay, well, we want to plant such and such weekend. Well, you know, glyphosate doesn't kill everything the second it hits it.
Right.
So, you know, back out, is it a week, you know, or are you going to come back in 2 weeks? That's fine.
Two weeks is probably about the best.
You spray it and then say, okay, because we're going to plant on, you know, how you hunt camp will say, we're going to have a first weekend in October, whatever. Okay, then back up 2 weeks and go spray it before that.
Yeah.
And then you'll come in there. And then at that point, all you're doing is coming in with your hopper, your seed and fertilizer hopper, you're spreading the same seed and fertilizer you would in a field if you're doing it conventional. You spread that, but you didn't disc. You're spreading it.
I won't do that because I'm going to wait till I know I'm going to have some rain coming.
Some rain.
Before
I'm talking about people
cause putting
camps off and just give them.
I'm putting seed on the ground. I'm not putting it in underground.
Right.
I'm putting it on top of the ground.
Yeah, you want a rain coming.
So I want to make
fertilizer.
Sure. Yes, I want to make sure I've got some rain coming before I do that.
No, well said. And the same thing's true on fertilizer. I could probably look it up online. Like every day that fertilizer's on the ground exposed to sun, it reduces by some percentage of its viability. But we will talk. So this is just a start to it. We will revisit throw and mow through the next couple of weeks because we've had questions already about it. All right, Captain Wayne Miller, let's go bass fishing when we come back on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have y'all along. Before we get to our next guest, a perennial favorite here. Man, actually, this makes sense because the same waters that he'll be bass fishing in
Yeah.
Our part of Gator season. So Gator season getting started here this next week.
Next Thursday.
Yeah. So now it's different for the different zones, but let's just, because most of them are the same, and then there's like the Eufaula zone and stuff that's a little different. But here, Southwest Management Zone, so that's the Delta, north of I-10, gets started always second Thursday in August.
Yeah.
So be starting.
Second or the first?
No, it's second Thursday in August.
Okay.
And then, let's see, but it's midnight, right? And then it goes through Sunday. And then the next week it does the same thing. And same thing for the coastal zone, which is south of I-10. And then there, we can go through it. I think the rest of it's the same except for like the southeast zone and Eufaula and all that. But down here, but those folks know. They've gotten their tags and they're ready to go.
Yep.
And they're going to be out. And Captain Wayne Miller is joining us now. Captain Wayne, do you ever worry that when gator season's going on, that they're out harassing the bass all night while they're trying to catch those gators and make it hard for you the next day? Have you been worried about that?
No, I don't pay much attention to those.
Okay,
guys.
Just check. I just wanted to check. Just wanted to see if I could start some drama out there between.
But
that.
I would think that Wayne would be the person that they'd want to talk to, because I would think Wayne sees lots of gators out there and knows where some big ones are.
I see a lot of gators, but yep. But I don't like to disclose where I see them, because if I tell one person, then I got to tell everybody, and so.
Yep.
It's we've got an abundance of gators now. You know, the trick there is, and I know what a lot of people are looking for, but you know, there's obviously some that you know that are just much larger than the other ones.
So, mm-hmm. Just alligators ain't what they're hunting. Big ones.
No. If you just hunting alligators, that's not a challenge on the Delta.
No, that's for
Wayne,
sure.
Wayne, do you see Neutra over there anymore?
Mike, it's been so long since I've seen a Neutra. Man, I mean, and I know you can remember, and you too, Sean. When Neutra, you thought they were going to take over the world.
You know what happened?
Yeah, alligators.
Alligators.
That's right.
And when the alligator population recovered,
yeah,
right, with the protection, that recovered. That did a world for, I mean, I watched it from, you know, starting duck hunting in the 1980s in the Delta when nutria were everywhere and gators weren't everywhere.
Yep.
To, you know, starting to get in through the 90s into 2000s, there were way more gators and way less nutria. Yeah, I mean, it used to be, I mean, you'd be running in to go hunt in the morning and big baddie or little baddie chocolate, I'd be nutria, you know, cruising down right in front of your boat, right and left. Our dogs got in fights with them, got torn up. You know, it's not a thing anymore. Not saying there's none there, but it's nothing like it used to be.
It used to be, yeah.
But I don't know the last time I saw one.
That's a great analogy for snapper and sharks, possibly.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Thin them out, you think. Captain Wayne, again, this time of year, let's approach this. You pay attention to this stuff. What is the water temperature right now, like in the Delta, maybe not, or up the rivers? Like, what's general water temperature we're dealing with right now?
Right now, in some of the bigger creeks, I've been seeing, during the middle of the day, seeing water temperatures exceed 93 degrees.
Whoo-wee. Oh, my gosh.
Now, you'll typically have a little bit cooler water out in the rivers just because you've got some current out there. But, I mean, the water is just, it is extremely hot. So, you know, the good news is, you know, like right now, we're in the middle of just a great tide cycle, man. I mean, you know, we've got a big, you know, incoming tide in the morning. And, you know, about midday, that water turns around. And for the entire afternoon, it is blowing. I'm talking about, we're looking at, you know, a 2.5 foot swing right now. So, you know, it's really some good water movement, which helps tremendously. Because, you know, even in these hot conditions, you know, I mean, it just, that current, it brings fish alive. You know, I mean, it just moves bait around. And, you know, that food chain is not going to stop just because it got hot.
That's right. So now, are you fishing in the morning with the incoming tide, or are you fishing in the afternoon?
Yeah, Mike. You know, it's been pretty good because, you know, kind of the way we've got the tide setting up right now, the water is actually pretty low first thing in the morning. So I love that. And, you know, we've got an incoming tide, so, you know, I like to get out there and fish. You know, it's a scenario where really, you know, you've only got kind of slow or non, you know, movement on the water around the middle of the day. And by then, you're begging for, you know,
shade.
Some break.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it's a great time. Right now, the conditions are such that it's good to go early or late.
Right.
I would strongly suggest you really consider going in the middle of the day, because even for people like myself that are acclimated being out in it, you can get too hot so quick. It's dangerous. You know, when you start getting these heat indexes up into the 110, 115, you know what I mean? People that are used to being out in it can succumb to it. So, you really need to give some thought about, you know, when you're going, make sure you're hydrated, wear some, the right clothing, and you know, just be careful. And, you know, I always tell people, you know, you've always got one option, and that's to jump in that water, man, cool off a little bit, get your core temperature down, and then crank that big motor up.
Mm-hmm.
Turn the AC on.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's it. Put that big bow on high, 70 miles an hour.
I have done that many times. You know, and people that bass fish, they fish all day. I mean, they don't take breaks. They start daylight, and, you know, it's almost dark, and they still fishing nonstop. I mean, they're conditioned to it. I know I was when I was fishing the tournaments years ago. Shoot, the only break we took was exactly what you said, jump in the water for a minute and get cooled off and get back and get to chunking again.
Yeah. So, but one good thing, I mean, we've got some excellent, you know, selection of, you know, the clothing and hats and sunscreen, and you know, we know a lot more about trying to stay hydrated now.
Absolutely.
I feel like we're much better educated to deal with those type conditions than we were, say, even 20 years ago.
I agree with you 100%. Things are, especially the clothing. You know, we just we wore cotton stuff back then. Everything was cotton, and, man, you just burn up in it.
But there's, you know, right now, you know, what I've been seeing is, you know, on up in the day, you know, I've been doing really good, you know, getting off on a little deeper water with soft plastic, with Texas rig. And then, you know, what I've been targeting in the afternoon, I've been primarily staying on the main rivers. But, you know, I like to find wood that, you know, extends out into deep water. And with that water falling in the afternoons, you know, the lower it gets, the better it typically gets, because it'll congregate those fish out toward the end of that structure.
Right.
And, you know, you can target them there with crankbaits or... And really, I've had a lot of luck here the last week, even with this extreme temperatures, with a buzz bait. I mean, the topwater bite's actually been pretty good.
Isn't that amazing? You wouldn't think about that this time of year with the water being hot, and it's just hot period, sun beaming down. You wouldn't think that a buzz bait would be that good. But listen, some of the ponds I fish in up the country, it's that way. In the summertime, you would never dream you'd catch them on a buzz bait. So it's something to that.
Well, you know, and there again, you know, I mean, it's amazing when you think about, you know, and we don't have a lot of it here on the Delta, but, you know, we do have some schooling opportunities where we catch fish schooling. And this time of year is when that typically happens out on the main rivers around points, some of the bridges and stuff like that. And, man, they will get active right in the middle of the day. I mean, it's the opposite of what you would think it would be.
They showing themselves just breaking the top of the water, or do birds get on them like they do when it's trout? Or what gives away that schooling?
You know, it's just them, you know, busting on top. You know, this time of year when you see birds out there, They're typically going to be around like Jack Crevalle, and we've already got Jack Crevalle up in the rivers right now.
Ship
oh no!
Don't say that. Wayne likes catching them.
Oh gosh, they ruin a bass fishing trip. I know they're fun to catch one. There's a one and no more.
Well, what you always need to keep in mind with the jacks, and I tell people this. When they start getting up in here, if you had any inclination that you're going to be goofy enough to cast to one of them, make sure you've got a rod and reel on the deck with a sacrificial bait.
Yeah.
A bait that you absolutely don't care about losing, because there's a high probability with bass gear, you're probably not going to get it back. And even if you do, it's going to look like something you don't recognize.
Yeah. That's a fact.
That is for sure. And yeah. I tell you, well, let me ask before we go to the break. Got 30 seconds here. You catching any other saltwater species? Any trout showing up? Redfish, flounder?
You know, I hadn't caught any trout, but man, the redfish have just been everywhere. And, you know, I don't know if y'all have heard or not. I've been catching tremendous numbers, primarily because this time of year I fish a lot of Texas rigs. But man, the flounder have just been off the chain.
Man, okay, I'd love to hear that.
People have been catching flounder in the Mobile River just like crazy.
Okay, well, we're going to come back and pick that up when we return. More with Captain Wayne Miller right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Quick reminder as well, coming up next month, time flies, 13th, 14th, and 15th. It is the G&D Farms Outdoor Expo at the grounds. Be out there doing Midday Mobile on Friday, and then on Saturday, a special FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors from the grounds at the G&D Outdoor Expo. Check them out online. If you go to Facebook, they're G&D Farms. That's one Facebook page, but you want to go G&D Farms Outdoor Expo and get that Facebook page.
Yeah, and I got one quick announcement, too. Next week is going to be the Gulf Coast King Classic out of Cocodrie, Louisiana. It's a new King Mackerel Tournament. We're getting started. Mike Spellmeyer is putting it on, and we've got several of us on the board of directors with him, me and Mark Kennedy and several more. Anyway, we're trying to make this into another big King Mackerel event. So anybody that might...
Okay, go online. What do you do?
Yeah, go online. Go to Fishing Chaos.
Okay.
And it's on there.
Okay. What's the name of it again?
It is the Gulf Coast King Classic. The first tournament is going to be out of Cocodrie. They're going to be out of Dolphin Island and other places next year, too.
Okay.
But the first one this year is going to be out of Cocodrie, Louisiana. We're looking forward to it. It's going to be a great time.
All right, good
Bunch
stuff.
Bunch of the old gang getting back together.
Oh, gosh. Beware, King Mackerel, beware. Here they come. Continue our conversation with Captain Wayne Miller, who has told us that the bass, even though the water is 216 degrees out there in the Delta, the bass are still biting out there. Captain Wayne, you also mentioned before we went to the break, you said, yeah, if you could just get through the flounder, you might catch even more bass, right?
Yeah,
You're killing me. You're killing me, Miller. You're killing me.
Well, I tell you, man, you put on a Texas rig, you know, I typically use a quarter-ounce tungsten weight. But any time you start bouncing some plastic around down there on that delta, man, you're going to catch a flounder. And this year has just been really a phenomenal year for them.
Now, watch this. We could go back through all all our interviews over the years with Captain Wayne Miller. What color on that soft plastic are you throwing that those flounder are biting? Captain Wayne?
Believe it or not, watermelon chartreuse.
Watermelon?
You got to be kidding me. You're fishing.
Is there a new color of watermelon?
if y'all need any other reason to buy watermelon chartreuse, is the fact that this man who fishes more days on the Delta than anybody I know, that's what you throw.
But Wayne, how do you tell it's the flounder bite or the crab bite? Because I know the crabs got to be eating you up over there.
You know, you get in stretches, the crabs won't be bad at all, but you know, when you feel one pulling it down, it just feels like it's getting heavy. You know you got a crab, and a lot of times you just you got to get away from them, man, because, you know, they'll be in one area and they'll eat all the plastic you give them. I can tell you that.
Yeah. Hey, when we finish up the show, I need to know those places too.
Yeah.
So I could get the old chicken on a string, and I'm gonna go get some of the. I'll help get the crabs out of there for you. How about that?
Yeah, man.
Same amount.
Me and my. We used to do that, and that's a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun.
It's a good way to catch some dinner, for sure.
And this is the time of year to go do it if you want to do it, right now.
And you can help Captain Wayne keep those crabs away from his bass lures.
That's right.
You know, because, I mean, that watermelon chartreuse ain't cheap.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always told people, I really believe Zoom and some of these other plastic manufacturers, they come down here and do something to proliferate this crab. These crabs, so I think they've got something to do with it ultimately.
So the flounder are in. I mean, these are places you're bass fishing. I mean, this is not like, you know, you would think, okay, well, he's going to be in super deep water or something like that to catch these flounder. But I mean, these are places you're bass fishing.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm catching a lot of them, and you know, and a lot of them I am catching. You know, they're around. You know, that first good drop off some of these flats off the bank.
3 foot.
But, you know, they're relatively shallow. I'm talking about, you know, 5 to 8 feet of water.
Yeah, you're not in like, because, I mean, people would think, oh, he's in 20-something feet of water on a bend or 25, but it's not.
Oh, no, no, nothing like that.
But man, imagine what we could do with a bull minnow.
Woo! But catching most of them on the river?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, most of them are, but you know, as I go up, you know, as I work my way in these creeks and all, I catch them in there too. It's, you know, I've gotten to the point to where it literally does not surprise me to catch a flounder or a redfish anywhere on this delta.
That's a testament too, because I mean, we've talked about that 100 times. Growing up on that delta, I had places I could go catch redfish, but it was just a few places. Right. Saying that you could catch them everywhere, it was not that way in the 80s and 90s.
That's right.
It was really, the redfish in the Delta is the best I've ever seen it. I mean, I'm sure maybe there's some old-timer knows better, but for me, it's the best now.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this, Wayne. What about the size of the flounder? That's important, too. I mean, are they little flounder? Are they medium?
Well,
are they big ones? Or?
A lot of them are big, Mike. But, you know, one thing that's kind of amazing to me, and I see this a lot now, a lot more so than I used to, and I see it both with the flounder and with redfish. Of course, I'm on the water a tremendous amount, but one reason I think the numbers are so impressive and have gotten, you know, I mean, it's just really phenomenal, is the fact that you catch a wide range from the standpoint of size. I mean, years ago, I don't know if y'all remember, but typically if you caught a redfish, it'd be a big monster redfish.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, every now and then you'd run into one. Well, now you catch, you know, the big ones, but you also catch, you know, a lot of the 5 to 8 pound, and then you catch a lot of the rat reds. You know what I mean? And I kind of see the same thing with the flounder, and it's just amazing to me because it just – gives me an indication of the sheer numbers that there has to be.
That's for sure. It's a good thing, and you got us fired up to catch bass and flounder. Tell folks they want to get a trip booked with you to do that, fishing this time of year, or, oh, my gosh, y'all, if y'all have never seen anything like it, if you fall fish bass with Captain Wayne, how do they get a trip booked with you?
They can reach me at 251-455-7404.
Hey, your phone faded out for a second. Your phone faded. Can you give that number again?
I said 251-455-7404.
All right, Captain Wayne, we appreciate it, and we'll do it again next week.
Thank you, Wayne.
Okay, guys, have a great one.
You too. There goes Captain Wayne, and we'll be back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. You can always catch us on the podcast page.